You are listening to The Mombcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. In our 240th episode, I'll be talking about some of this week's comics. Maybe James will talk to me about them too, I don't know. And in his spotlight, James will be talking about The Savage Sword of Kull, Volume 1, which is a giant book that I'm looking at from over here. Around the mic tonight. Oh, I've spoiled it already though, haven't I?
Yeah.
There's me, I'm Nick.
And me, James.
Hello, James.
Hi, Nick.
How have you been this week?
Do you know, I've got a bit of a snotty cold.
Have you?
I'm probably going to do a lot of sniffing, and I expect it's going to impair my vocal performance tonight.
Well, that sucks.
Which is it does, a little bit.
Because you do most of the legwork on the vocal performance side of things.
Yeah.
People come to... I know that generally speaking, I've got the insights and stuff that people come for, but I am conscious that as one person put it, I have a monotone voice, a bit like Marvin the Paranoid Android.
Sorry, what? I fell asleep. What?
Exactly. In terms of range, yeah. And the number of voices and stuff, people will have Jane for whimsy.
Yeah.
And slightly sarcastic banter. And they have you for range of you've got characters,
yeah.
as I heard them referred to on the much more popular podcast Comedy Bang Bang, Caracks. You're good with Caracks.
Yep.
You're also good with improvisation.
Yeah.
If you're feeling a bit grotty and snotty, it's literally just insights and monotone voices, especially if Jane's not here to add sarcasm. And whimsy.
Are we saying that if you've not downloaded this in the week it came out, skip on to 241?
No, I feel like we're doing a lot of episodes that people could skip over.
Just skip the 250. We're not going to do anything special for it, but it's a nice round number, isn't it?
It's nearly 250.
We're not far off. Only know 10 weeks.
It's exciting.
Yeah, I had to do math then.
So you've had a cold. I was round at your house on Monday. We won't say what I was round there to do because that's the other podcast.
Chicken. We were there to eat.
It's literally the other podcast.
It was. And chicken. No, we ate chicken.
But also we ate chicken. It was very nice.
My Yorkshires rose nicely, didn't they?
Oh, your Yorkshires were a last-minute extravagance, but they were amazing.
Yeah.
And it's nice because at my house, we've got two chickens. No, we've got one chicken between two people. And I'm only allowed to, in theory, we're only allowed to go to the potatoes and the chicken once when we sort out our meal. And then we go to the dinner table and we eat it. And then maybe we'll snack on a couple more potatoes over the course of the night and a bit more chicken skin. But we're not really allowed to keep going back for more. And at your house, there were like four of us eating. That chicken seemed to be endless.
It was, yeah.
I was allowed to keep dipping in. It was amazing.
Well, you were our guest.
It had three legs at one point. How did that even work?
I think Nicola had been drinking quite heavily throughout the day because she insisted that I hadn't taken the legs off or the wings. But there were clearly two wings and two legs in the dish.
I had two of the wings and one of the legs.
And Nicola kept berating me, saying, no, I just saw a leg on it. I go, but there's two fucking legs here.
How many
legs do you think a chicken has? I don't think she really understands how chicken legs work.
No, I don't. I don't think she does.
It's a decent-sized chicken, to be fair.
What else did you do? So you...
Found something interesting out this weekend.
What did you find?
This week. Maybe I should leave it for the other show. I don't know. But as you know, I'm a Keen fan of...
You're a fan of the band Keen?
No. I like the podcast, Magnum Cast.
Yes.
It's by Luke Foster and Clarky the Mean Northerner.
Yes, the...
I think
the,
that's his name.
The...
Key Scouse.
Obnoxious northerner.
He is. And when he's not sent...
He's genuinely one of the most cuddly people I've ever met.
He is. I like the Magnum Cast. He's all like, hey, Bogle, welcome to Magnum Cast. And this week I watched him. He was in Ferrari and he went to Hawaii... stuff
with his tash,
with his moustache.
They like his... Magnum up north because he's got the gigantic tash and the curly hair.
Yeah, and he says, I like it because it's exotic. It's nothing like your actual Ilkley Moor Whippet flat cap Eccles cakes. And so I enjoy it. It's one of my favourite podcasts. It's light-hearted, but also it's rekindled a love in me for the show Magnum Pie.
Is that why? Because Northerners like pie as well, don't
they? I love pie. That's one of the main reasons I like it, Clarky the Nasty Northerner. It's one of the main reasons I like it so much. No, what? No, that's not the reason I like it. Anyway, I had it on last night, and my daughter happened to be there. She only sat down, crossed her legs, transfixed by it. She could not get enough of Magnum, who had ate out of bad guys. But it's easy. There were three bad guys, and there was Magnum, who's the good guy.
And
nice and easy.
Children love exotic locations,
yeah,
too.
But I was genuinely surprised how much she dug it. It was very satisfying.
You dig?
Yeah. And that was a little... that's the sort of banter you can... enjoy
regularly.
Two Grown Men.
Two Grown Men, which you can get at twogrownmen.net.
Yeah.
Where's the Magnum Cast? Sorry, that's the number two.
It's on the
grown
internet.
Grownmen.net.
Just go to the podcatcher of your choice and type Magnum Cast.
And you'll find it.
Yeah, or Luke Foster. I think it's published under Luke Foster's name.
But you'll find it. You're clever. I'll try and put it in the show notes, listener. It'll go in there.
Mm.
I need to make a quick note of something I need to talk about in a minute.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
I'll just give me a sec. Give me a sec.
Oh, this is very much like last night's Magnum. You're writing it on the rear flank of a dog.
Yes. So that's
honestly
weird. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's what the story is about. It was about they wanted to get hold of a dog because it had a number printed on its bum.
So I just thought of a really off-colour joke. No, okay, I'm not going to run with that. So the Magnum Cast... Daughter likes the Magnum Cast. You had someone awesome over for chicken dinner, and then you had me over for chicken dinner as well. What else? Anything else?
Saw the doctor.
How was that? How did that go?
That was sucky.
Isn't it often though? You never go there. You never go there to hang out.
She's nice, but yeah, it never makes me. I never come out of the doctor thinking, "Oh, good, that was nice." Basically, I'm almost 40. And, you know, that was the outcome of that. And I needed another test for diabetes. She kept looking at me and going, it's only a matter of time, you fat bastard. Go on, have another blood test.
I never got diagnosed as nearly 40, and now I'm over 40, and no one's diagnosed me at all.
You need to go to the doctor and have a finger put up your bum. You should, now you're 40, you should go and have prostate checked out.
I've had a robot stuck up my bum. Presumably they checked then.
No, I don't think so. You should go to the... You can have an over 40s health check. I think all men should do that. Once you go over 40, you go to the doctors and ask them to stick their finger up your bum.
This week, from our various mom feedback, I think it was mostly mom feedback, it's hard to tell these days, but I found that at least one listener... always imagines I'm stark bollock naked when we're doing the podcasts. I'm not going to out them. I didn't check that it was okay.
All right.
And at least one other assumes that I ejaculate dust.
Oh yeah, yeah. Which it tastes like strawberry angel delight powder.
It's possible that my podcast persona is taking on a life of its own. I'm not sure how that's happening.
You and you're ejaculating.
My week. Can I talk about my week,
Nick,
now?
Tell us about your week.
I've been watching some Justified. I do like that show. I'm trying to catch up on season four, and it's season five just finished, so I'm getting a move on. But not quickly enough, obviously. And my wife took my son away for a few days up to Oxford to stay with family. Because it's half term, not because she's leaving me. I feel I have to state that over and over again. So I spent a bit of time at James's house. I went and saw X-Men Days of Future Past on Tuesday with a friend. Should I talk about that now or in the awkward middle bit?
Well, it's entirely up to you. Let's get it over and done with.
I think a lot of the people in it were nice, were good, did a good job. Some of the special effects people did a good job. There were nice bits. I liked the action. Some of the fights were really clever. They did a good job with some of the, I was going to say magic, and I mean powers. Problematically, at points and fairly major plot points, they did treat the powers a little bit like magic, in that having previously established what characters could do, they then decided that that meant they could magically do whole shitloads of other stuff as well, which was a little bit weird.
Magneto?
No, actually, I mean, he did the standard Magneto stuff. There's some weird Kitty Pryde stuff. There's some weird Professor X stuff. And apparently having a healing factor, like Wolverine's, also means that your soul or your mind or your brainwaves are exceptionally resiliently healy factory as well, even when being used in a nebulous brain swappy technology that is never really explained. It feels very focus grouped. It feels like there were lots of studio notes that came down that were very good, but the people writing it had maybe already written as much of it as they really wanted to and didn't really have, their heart really wasn't in the studio notes. So there's loads of odd stuff in there. Also, and this is a slightly more general issue I have with films, although a lot of the issues I had with the film are very similar issues I have with a lot of blockbuster films. They've got more plot than they need to, and the people making them aren't very good at plot. So, the thing that really bugs me is I imagine some of the effects look good in 3D, but I don't understand why they haven't managed to work out a way of doing effects in 3D that when they are moved down to 2D, don't look like 1980s blue screening.
Oh.
It's really very strange. It's not for all of it. Some of the powers and the special effects and stuff, the fight special effects, are really, really good, really, really solid. If like heavily CGI'd, they're really, really nice. There are odd bits where stuff's floating around and being moved around, sometimes by Magneto and sometimes other situations where it, the planes seem to swim against each other, and
exactly what you mean.
This is kind of distracting. I don't understand. There was an awesome trailer for Planet of the Apes, the next Planet of the Apes film, though, which I'm really looking forward to. And also a trailer for the Tom Cruise science fiction Groundhog Day remake, which I think is called Edge of Tomorrow, which looks amazing. But then Oblivion, the previous Tom Cruise science fiction film, looked amazing. So I'm reserving judgment on it, but it does look amazing.
And it's always fun looking at adverts off the telly, very large and extremely loud.
That's really weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the adverts were so loud. The film itself wasn't so
bad. Make sure the message really goes in. My friend at work, Paul, saw it, and his review of the Sentinels were cool.
I was a little bit worried.
I'm lending him the Days of Future Past comic, though.
Oh, okay.
Which I think will do his head in, because obviously it's topped and tailed by stories in the book that aren't Days of Future Past. One where they essentially go through several circles of hell, the X-Team, and one with, it's Alpha Force and the Wendigo?
Alpha Flight.
Alpha Flight and the Wendigo.
Wendigo.
Whatever.
Okay.
He's not real. So
no, but there's only one.
It,
actually, though, he is, the name is taken from action mythology, I think.
Wendigo.
There's only one N.
At Wendigo. And I think that'd do his head in. It'd be good. But, enjoy that. It'd be nice. Wendigo.
If he liked the film, I don't think a graphic novel that has two extra stories in it that he wasn't expecting is going to bother him that much.
No, I mean, I'm not awfully keen on that first story in there.
I think
Kitty Pryde's a bit of a tit in it as well, to be perfectly honest with you.
I really like Kitty Pryde, though.
Yeah, see, I didn't read X-Men at the right age. She just annoyed. I enjoy her giant bullet phasing antics, but
it was good if what you wanted was to see literally every single character that you liked from the other films in it somehow, even if you didn't really care about, as long as you didn't really care about how they managed to make it happen.
Can I ask you a couple of questions that go against your nature?
Follow-up questions, yes.
Okay. I just require yes or no answers here.
Okay.
Is it better than Last Stand?
I can't answer
you
that
over-specified,
yes or no.
You over-specified your answer, Nick. You failed. Have you seen Last Stand?
Is it better than Last Stand?
Yeah.
No, I don't think it is.
Okay. Is it as good as Singer's first two X-Men movies?
No.
And do you think of me when you're making love to your wife?
Sometimes.
Okay. You failed to answer any of those really properly, didn't you?
No, I got the second one right.
Do you use the thinking of me when you're making love to your wife as a delay or hurry up?
As a delay, always. The first question requires a caveat. I don't think that I think the problem with that question is I don't necessarily think that X3 is as bad as other people do.
I quite like it.
I don't think it's an awesome film, but then I don't think many of the flaws in it. It actually replicates a lot of the issues of that film, a lot of the slightly weird-looking special effects.
I've got the first three on DVD, and I'll go into like a little X-Men cycle where I watch them.
Mm.
And I never miss three out. I always watch it. Yeah. I enjoy it. I think it's a very serviceable action film, actually.
There is nothing in it that is as visually exciting or unusual as the Phoenix Force in X3. The one of the things that I always remember from X3 that I always really liked about that film, and I forgave it a lot because of it, is that I loved the way it worked when Jean Grey's powers went into overdrive, and you know, the way everything sort of disintegrates. And it didn't have anything that blew me away like that. There was lots of stuff that looked similar to other films, and which you get in everything, but there was nothing that really popped. And it replicated some of the stuff from First Class. Some of what was charming about First Class is in there, but it's all there, all over the place.
I had similar staying caveats of my own. While I like it just fine, every second that Vinnie Jones is on the screen tears away a little bit of my soul.
That's Vinnie Jones in anything that isn't by Shane Ritchie, though.
No,
and when I say Shane Ritchie, I mean Guy Ritchie.
Vinnie Jones in anything. I cannot abide Vinnie Jones.
Yeah, no, I get that. He's my least favourite thing in Swordfish. There's him, the absolutely pointless appearance of Halle Berry's breast. Oh, the other thing about Days of Future Past, as much as I said that everything in it, that every character is in it, I was thinking the whole, every time Storm turned up, I was like, I bet Halle Berry's really glad she turned up for filming. But then having said that, the issues with Storm are the same in, I think, the first two X-Men films. I don't think she's been particularly well served by any of the X-Men films. So, I don't know. She's an interesting, fluid character, and they basically have her standing around stiff as a board until she needs to use her powers, and then she rises up into the air stiff as a board and concentrates really hard.
She's got lower back problems, though, hasn't she?
Is that what that's about?
Probably.
Okay. I try not to be negative, but this is literally the one place I get to talk about comics other than Facebook and...
You're such a fanboy.
...Twitter, and I know, it's horrible. I've got so much entitlement.
I'd like to keep this first 20 minutes quite light. You've really brought it down.
I'm sorry. But that was pretty much it. Did anything else genre-y happen? I watched Super 8 last Friday. That's a good film.
Now, I don't know whether we've had this conversation in real life, on the other podcast, or whether I imagined one of those two scenarios.
I think the first two. I think we might have talked about it on both. I won't talk about it at length, but because it is a science fiction-y film.
Cool.
It never, like, it's one of those odd films. A lot of films these days a lot of the big films start to really, even if they've been a bit naff up to that point, the crescendo of the final act is sometimes quite well done, because there are all of these sort of Hollywood wisdom-y things about how stories are supposed to tie up in the final act and stuff that force films to come together a little bit in the final act. And that's the one thing about Super 8 is it the final act is kind of a bit meh, but everything leading up to that feels like watching Goonies or some other Steven Spielberg 1980s film when they were really good. You know, the really good ones. They got teenage characters in. Okay, granted, they are a little bit like silly. They're not as gross as teenagers actually are, but they don't feel sanitized either.
Sure,
they aren't nice to each other, which, you know, I think there's a lot of in little groups of boys. It's largely boys then. And,
yeah.
And the Fanning that's in it, I can't remember which one she is, but she's really quite good. I think all of the kid actors in it are really quite good, actually. So
put that on the poster. Put that on the poster.
Do you think they're still looking for...
I think all of the kid actors in it, I quite like movie posters with Amazon reviews, the Tumblr site.
Oh.
That is often very amusing indeed.
I don't think I've seen that.
All right, I can give you a couple of very
quick... I have seen it from one star Amazon reviews.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know the one. So that's it.
You just stand up to stop me reading a couple out.
No, I remember. I just didn't hear you properly. I didn't. When you said Amazon, I thought you said Amazon.
Who's that?
I don't know. That's why I thought you were talking nonsense. Are you reading one of them now?
It's just the first one that popped up. This is Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So if you're not aware of it, it's awful review posters is the Tumblr site. And this is for Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Matthew Broderick plays the worst thing ever, the high school kid that is an idiot and doesn't go to school because he wants to fornicate with his girlfriend.
I think I've seen that one.
Yeah.
I'd have probably watched that movie as well if that's what the film was actually about, though.
Probably. I'm just looking through.
You're just reading it. Shall I do the admin bit now?
Well, I'm reading Pornhub comments on stock photos now, which is...
So, while James is doing that, I'll just do a little bit of admin.
It's a funny one.
Right, okay. Will it translate to being read out on a podcast?
Oh, Ravgo, you can edit it out because it made me laugh. So this is a comment from Pornhub comments on stock photos, and this one is it's an old man using a laptop. The picture, he's in the outside. It's a little bit like if you're familiar with the final scene of X-Men: The Last Stand. It looks like he could be in a park, such as the one as Magneto and Xavier find themselves in. And the comment is: during World War II, soldiers fuck so many beautiful girls and matures. Europeans know how to show the world the way to fuck during such times. What a beautiful comment.
That's just weird.
I mean, I can understand why people won't want to go and look at used pornography. Why you'd want to leave a comment about, watching this made me come. Thank you to the people that did this. I've come now.
I'm not entirely certain why people leave comments on. I think people like, in all circumstances, people like to feel that they've left their mark somehow. And your choices with porn is either to leave a comment. And internet comments are never that good, but is either to leave a comment or to upload a tribute photo of some kind. And not every website allows for that. So
that's true. I have to say there's very few times have I watched internet pornography without leaving my mark.
I don't want to talk about this anymore. So in a minute we'll start talking about comics, I absolutely promise. And if you want to talk to us about comics or any of the other things we've been talking about, I never really thought that I'd want to talk to people more about comics than about my penis, which most of the comments seem to be about.
We've all had enough of your penis.
Me too.
Signed, Nick's wife.
If you want to talk to us about comics or anything else on the show, you can do that. You can either do that by commenting on the blog post for this episode or any of the previous episodes, if that's what you want to comment on. The website address is...
momcast@gmail.com.
No, it isn't. That's not the website address.
Oh, I thought you said the email. Did he ask me what the email address is?
The website is at momcomics.com.
Oh, I was going to do that.
All of this episode and all of the previous episodes of the show are free to listen to there, and you can leave comments on the site there. There are also occasionally reviews of comics and interviews and stuff like that. I believe we've actually got a review up of the X-Men movie by John. And I deliberately didn't read it before I went to see the film because I thought, oh, God, if he's... And then after I saw the film, I put off reading it because I thought, if John really liked the film, then he and I are going to end up having an annoying discussion about it at some point. But he had roughly the same misgivings as I did, so that's good. So, yeah, if you want to read a negative review of a film you enjoyed, go ahead and look at the site. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page. We have a Facebook page where most of the time when a post gets put on the site, there's a reminder on the Facebook page, and that's all very exciting.
I don't get to see that because I've got a bit of an aversion to Facebook.
I know a lot of sensible people do, and you. Also, we've got a page on Google Plus and a page at Tumblr. We need to do more with the Tumblr site. And I don't really know what people do with their Google Plus pages. But if you're on either of those places and you think that we should engage with people there, please do get in touch.
Why don't you tell us what you'd like to see?
What I'd like to see?
No, listener.
Oh, right. Listener, why don't you tell us what you'd like to see?
I don't care what you want to see. Well, I know what you want to see, you filthy monkey.
You can also email us with your comments or just, you know, because you want to chat at...
Huh?
This is your bit.
Oh, momcast@gmail.com.
That's momcast, not mumcast.
M-O-M-B. Or bombcast.
Yeah, so that's you can email us there. We also take 2 to 5 minute contributions, audio contributions for the site. If you want to write for the podcast, sorry, if you want to write for the site or get involved with the podcast at all, please do get in touch with us there. You can also talk to James or I or just to the Mom account, which we both kind of pay attention to on Twitter. I think that's where we're easiest to get hold of, isn't it?
Definitely me, yeah.
You are?
James Mom.
And I am Nixsight, N-I-X-S-I-G-H-T. We're also on SoundCloud.
Yes.
And the most recent 10 episodes of Momcast are on SoundCloud. If you tend to listen to stuff on there, but you've been suffering to listen to us on iTunes or somewhere like that, then you can go look for us on SoundCloud, and we are there now.
We're also very proud to be part of Stitcher Radio.
Yeah.
That's Stitcher Radio for all of your internet radio needs.
That's this show, right?
Yeah, all of them. All of them are there now.
Okay. See, I
checked.
I really, really like the SoundCloud way of leaving feedback. I love it. There's a few things up with SoundCloud. But the thing I really, really like about it is that you can look at the podcast, the audio you're listening to in the sound waveform thing, and you can leave comments on the particular minute of something that you want to leave a comment on. So if you think that the way I just said minute was rubbish or awesome, you can leave a comment that says, I thought the way Nick just said minute was rubbish or awesome. And we'll see it, and it'll be right there on the bit you were talking about. I think Nick sometimes gets jumbled up in his sentences in a way that is unbecoming of a podcaster. I think that James has gone silent, and it's unlikely that it's because he's doing weird tongue things while he looks at Nick, so it must be something else.
Sometimes I just like to look at you and see how easy it is to derail you. Very difficult on that occasion.
Yeah, I was already well derailed. Should we talk about this week's comics?
I think we should, yeah. Do the joke.
2000 AD Prog 1883. As I understand it, I've heard mutterings on the internet that the way 2000 AD is produced is that all of the resources in the year 1883 are used up to create Prog 1883, sent forward to the future, and that year then collapses into a singularity or black hole. At the moment, we're okay because it's going to be several weeks before they catch up to us. A little over 2,000, I think, before they catch up to us. So that's okay. No, is that wrong?
Yeah.
200, a little over 200 weeks. So we got about 4 years. I probably even got that wrong.
I think we should keep the Momcast going at least another 4 years just to see what happens. We could live report from the end of time.
Judge Dredd starts a new story. It's written by Michael Carroll with art by Nick Percival. It's kind of that heavily rendered, fully painted not fully painted, fully digitally painted art that I'm never entirely sure of, but it's quite an interesting mind-bending story. And the pictures of Dread make his helmet look really shiny.
He looks really cool, actually.
It's quite a contrast from John McCrae's art on the last story, but it is quite nice. Slain, the Britannia Chronicles, they're called. This is so weird. Let me just tell you the tagline, not the tagline, the sort of subheading, subname for this is, James. I'm sure there's another word for that.
Subtitle.
It's called Slain. Subtitle, that's it. It's called Slain or Slania. The Britannia Chronicles, Book 1, A Simple Killing, Part 10.
Jesus Christ.
It's a bit confusing.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the Britannia Chronicles continue. This is the first, it's by Pat Mills and Simon Davis. This is the first episode. I've been singing the praises of this story for a little while. This is the first episode that really felt like nothing really moves along particularly far. It's just Pat Mills noodling a little bit. It's not awful in the context of the wider story, but it does slow everything down quite a lot. Indigo Prime continues to be gorgeous. There's this weird party at the end of time going on where Arcade Fire are playing. It's very strange.
So it's a bit hipsterish.
Well, it doesn't seem hipsterish. It seems more hippie-ish, but that's besides the point.
I don't know much about Arcade Fire. They're Canadian, aren't they?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. The real reason I wanted to mention it, though, mention 2000 E, though, is that there's a Judge Dredd story starting, but there's also quite a nice Tharg's Three Riller starting. The first part of this three-part story is called In Seconds Flat, and it's written by Eddie Robson with art by Andrew Curry. It's quite a nice story about it's like a kind of almost romantic comedy time travel-y thing, which I'm completely in the market for. I liked it a lot. I don't have any notes this week. That's exciting, isn't it?
Spitballing.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are probably going to be talking about this next book this week, and already are, actually. It's written by Warren Ellis with art by Jason Howard. It's $2.99 from Image, and it's called Trees. It's got an incredible cover, a really striking, striking, brooding cover. It's set in kind of the immediate future, I guess 10 years after the immediate future, although the date is never set, but it starts with 10 years after. And it's a story about our planet 10 years after a weird, you don't know if it's an alien, but you don't know really exactly what's happened. All you know is that at some point, these giant trunk-like things appeared everywhere, all over the planet. Then they're like massive. It doesn't give you an exact scale for them, but they are massive. Like whole towns have to build up around them because they're so in the way of everything and stuff like that. The real identifying feature of this weird invasion is that these things, which are called the trees because they look like trees and they kind of have an almost organic way of expressing themselves, like they've got sort of roots and things growing off them at the lower, they seem to have at the lower scale, of lower end of things. They don't seem to know we're here at all. They're like, they don't respond. They haven't tried to communicate with us. Any attempts to communicate with them has, nothing's happened. Nothing's come of it. Nothing's come out of them as far as we know at this point in the story.
So they behave very similarly to trees.
Actual trees. Except that part of their biological processes or whatever, as happens in this story, when they run off, waste product, they're so big and the waste product's so devastating that it'll just knock out whole towns and stuff because they are so massive. And around this, you start with, it starts in Rio de Janeiro with some rebel teenagers being attacked and being chased by the pacification police. And then the scene shifts to, like, there's the New York mayor or the guy who's running for New York mayor. So you get a look at the way people are dealing with it politically in America. Then it jumps to, I don't know if it's, I mean, I'm awful. I don't know if it's North Korea or where it is. It's somewhere, I think it might be Japan, actually. There's a flag there. I'm not sure. But you basically get a look at, and then there's a Arctic, Northwest Spitsbergen. So it's not, I don't know where that is. It's cold. I read it not long ago, not long before we started recording, so I didn't do proper research on the geography, and geography is a real problem
that
for me.
That feels Norwegian to me.
But you basically get a look at the ways all of these different parts of the planet are dealing with this situation. What I found quite chilling was the scenes set in Rio de Janeiro are not dissimilar to some of the pictures I saw in a I don't know really whether to call it an article or a blog post about what's happening in Brazil in the run-up to the World Cup. There were some quite graphic images being shared on Facebook, and I, you know, it was very clickbaity, but I ended up clicking on it and going and looking. And some of the photos were of things that the police allegedly have done, killing. Well, the term pacification police is straight out of that, I think, to be honest. I think they
Brazil's got a long history, though, hasn't it, of pacifying the lower classes. I mean, there were famously, whether it still goes on, death squads that would tour the favelas, basically taking people out.
Yeah. Well, I think if the thing I was reading the other day is to be believed, and I mean, I've no reason to believe it, to not believe it, but it wasn't a news article. It was clearly written from the point of view of, there weren't sources being backed up really, as far as I could tell. Do you know what I mean? But it certainly seems very damning. And some of the images in this comic are really similar to some of the images I saw in that. It's not really dissimilar,
I think, to the riots we had in 2011 and the way that those were dealt with as well. I think it's possibly more violent in Brazil.
Oh, no, definitely. Definitely. But anyway, so it's interesting because Warren Ellis does this a lot. He looks at what's going on around. He does lots of research on social, like things that are happening sociologically all over the place, but also things that are happening technologically. And he's always been pretty good at, like, putting those together, as in Transmetropolitan and other comics. But his way of doing it normally is a lot more direct than in this comic. This is written with an awful lot more restraint than I'm used to seeing in his writing. I think he's technically one of the best writers working in comics anyway. I'm not saying his stuff's normally super unrestrained, but what I mean is that there's normally a very direct viewpoint in them. And in this, he's doing a very good job of evoking disaster movie narratives where you're seeing lots of different, you're getting a window onto the world in all these different places rather than like getting one particularly strong viewpoint that's really thrown at you. And it works really well in that respect. It's interesting so far. It's difficult to latch onto any of the particular characters in it. They seem to be quite nicely written, but it's so different from how he normally writes, and it's so set apart from the characters as we watch them going around that even by putting you in their heads sometimes, I'm not quite sure of the characters yet, but it's certainly interesting. Jason Howard's art is amazing. It reminds me a lot of it's quite scratchy and makes a lot of great use of space and composition, and there's a lot of movement in it, and the facial expressions are all really solid. You know, the acting on the characters is all really solid. It reminds me of artists like Christopher Mitten and Justin Greenwood, who's working on The Fuse. What's a little bit weird for me with this is that although it's not derivative at all of Letter 44 or of The Fuse, the setting, which is kind of real world mixed with science fiction, and the art style, which is kind of in the same ballpark, and the way it's shifting between looking at politics and looking at like thrilling aspects and stuff like that, it reminds me a lot of those two Burks, but they got there first and they've gripped me a little bit harder. That sounds really weird. So I'm probably going to need to reread it again and try and separate it from that context, because I'm at the moment I'm thinking, well, it's nice, but I am really enjoying it. It makes me want to read Letter 44 and The Fuse even more. Which is kind of weird. And that makes it sound like they're a lot more similar than they are, and they probably aren't, but it's kind of in the same ballpark, science fiction, but contemporary setting, or contemporary feeling setting. Because The Fuse is set on a space station, so that's not that contemporary.
Well, there is a space station.
It's a bigger space station than that one.
Fair enough.
Southern Bastards number 2 by Jason Aaron and Jason Latour from Image is the second part of the Alabama Noir.
You are.
Comic. Jason Aaron's kind of got form for... setting thrillers in these not rural but kind of remote areas, and I talked a bit about the first episode. This second episode hasn't had much time to sit with me yet, but it's got the same mix of really solid, gritty, small town action, high stakes, corruption, and nice dialogue. Nice characterization, and this really weirdly heavy allegory that's in it. In the first issue, when I was talking about it, I talked about how this character has, and he's quite an old guy. He's gone back to the town he grew up in to finally tidy up and sell his father's house, because his uncle's been staying there and his uncle's gone into care. So he's gone there to, and he's not been there in years. He left when he was a teenager, I think, and he's not been back. Because he hated it and he hated his dad. And in the first issue, it's established that his father, once he died, he was buried in the front yard of their house, and his old stick, his old baseball like bat that he had, that he used on wrongdoers, because his dad was the sheriff, of course, It was buried with him, and this tree has grown up out of his grave, and it's massive. And at the end of the first issue, the character was trying to the protagonist was trying to chop the tree down as a sign of defiance and of saying, "I'm not my dad." And there are a couple of scenes in this where that metaphor is really, really drummed home, like almost mythically. Drummed home, which is really interesting because, as I said, I've been trying to catch up with Justified recently, and this feels a bit like that. He's been, in fact, it's very similar to that, in that that's also about a character who really wanted to get away from this weird small town family and background he's from, but he's forced back there for some reason and he's having to deal with it, and there's the similar sort of corruption and weirdness there. I'm kind of really in the market for something like that. Pretty good. My final comic purchase this week. I had to put a few things back in my standing order for next week, as it turns out. Oh. Other books that came out this week that Dead Body Road finished this week. The Midas Flesh is about two issues from the end of its 8-issue run. And Ms. Marvel number 4, I'm assuming I'll love that as much as I have been loving Ms. Marvel, but I haven't got around to reading it yet. So sorry about that. Oh, remind me why I didn't read all my comics this lunchtime. At the awkward middle bit. It's awkward that I'm bringing it up now, isn't it?
I don't know what's going on.
Okay, so final comic, Titan from Titan Comics. It's $3.99. It's Ordinary by Rob Williams and Disraeli. Now, I think this is reprinted from the magazine, but it might not be. I might be wrong about that. And it's reprinted from the magazine and from the Judge Dredd, the magazine, although it's nothing to do with the Judge Dredd universe. It's like a completely original story. And it might not have been in color. It might have been recolored for this. It looks like it's being colored by Disraeli, whether it was originally in color or this is... Or it's been done for this. It's about a character called Michael. He seems to be in our world, But he's a deadbeat. He's a complete waster. His ex-wife isn't really fond of him. He apparently hasn't been in touch with his son for a really inappropriately long time. He's an unreliable work partner, which we find out very early on, and he owes some very dodgy people lots and lots of money. And he wakes up into this situation from a dream wherein he's with Scarlett Johansson, and it's his dream, and it still ends up romantically disappointing, even though it's his dream. And it's kind of established pretty early on. That's pretty much the tone of his life. It's not a great life, but it sounds like that's not entirely unearned, if that makes sense. But then as all of this is being established, by the fourth page, you see weird stuff starts to happen. And then by around the sixth or seventh or eighth page, everything's just gone completely pear-shaped. His work partner's turned into a bear. And seemingly everyone has weird powers or something weird has happened to them except him. And he's trying to, and it's in New York, but you find out that it's happened everywhere. And he's trying to get to his son because, who's across New York, because obviously he wants to try and rescue his son. Although you get the feeling he's not really sure how to go about that. He's just kind of doing it. It's, absolutely gorgeously drawn. It's Disraeli's really good at character work, but he's also really, really good at setting scene and having a sense of place and visual comedy. Visual and physical comedy he's really good at that. And he's really good at drawing weird stuff. And there is so much weird stuff in this comic that I wasn't sure I was going to get it read in time because it's so dense and weird. There's so much stuff going on in the background. It's also so beautifully colored. I always really liked Disraeli's art, but I just think this just feels and looks so much better than anything I've seen by him before. But I'm sure if I look at Stickleback or something again, I'll think, well, that's a stupid thing to say because he changes his style. Like he's always really amazing in whatever style he chooses to draw, but also his faces always kind of give away that it's Disraeli.
Yeah.
And so saying it's the best thing I've ever seen by him is a bit ridiculous because actually he's so different so much of the time. But I just loved it. Every panel I was just like really trying to see every single detail in. But it's really funny as well. Rob Williams' script is just they've established a really unusual and nuts story that allows Disraeli to go crazy, but it also allows the writer to just do weird things. There are lots of interesting characters in it. The interaction between him and his partner when his partner's turned into a bear is really funny, but kind of pithy and dry as well. And there's a scene with a apparently cosmically aware, suddenly cosmically aware taxi driver that I know you'd love in particular, James. Really, really good comic. So very much worth anyone's time, I think. I don't know if people like comic shops are necessarily going to know how to market a book like this, but it's really, really good. Also on the shelves, I noticed when I was in the comic shop earlier on, though, should we just segue straight into the awkward middle bit?
Okay, Rob Liefeld.
Yeah, no, James.
Cool.
While I was in the comic shop, our local comic shop today, our beloved branch of FP, the downstairs has flooded. Apparently no stock was damaged, but they only had new comics on display and they were all upstairs. Basically, the whole of the downstairs is shut off, which is like, it's quite a nice space for a comic shop, actually, just the upstairs. There were only new comics on display, which the context of that is quite important in what I'm about to say. But Brass Sun number one in American format came out. That looks really, really good. That's a 2000 AD strip, but it's a really idiosyncratic strip even in 2000 AD with the variety of stuff that's in there. I think it's probably quite kid-friendly. I don't know. It's certainly very fantasy fan-friendly. Very nice. I really like it. And it looks really good in American format as well. But the reason I didn't get all of my stuff read today was because while I was in there, a lady who was there with two of around the same age as James, not as me. So like around like late 30s, was there with two boys of around 10 years old. And she asked, I was talking to James, who works there, and she asked us, because I guess I was talking to James, what comics might be okay for a 10-year-old. It was more difficult than it should have been. She wanted, very specifically, what she was after was, which makes it slightly more difficult, was a comic that was either easy to pick up, like a pamphlet, like a monthly issue of a comic, that the kids could read an issue of, didn't have to be the first issue, but it had to kind of make sense, and then get into on a regular basis. So that kind of rules out trade paperbacks. There are loads of things you could, if you were going to delve into the trade paperbacks, you could find Bone or any number of other things. But all I could think of was, well, Brass Sun maybe, but I'm not entirely sure, and it is a bit weird. There's a new Amazing Spider-Man. There's a first issue of Amazing Spider-Man.
There you go.
But I haven't read it yet, so I don't know how tied into continuity it is.
It doesn't matter. They're pretty accessible. I picked up Spider-Man, big continuity. They are written incredibly accessibly. And 10-year-old boys, Amazing Spider-Man, especially at the moment.
They're pretty resilient.
Catnip, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I suggested it.
Yeah.
But I suggested it with the caveat that I haven't read it, and I don't know. It is coming off the back of quite an unusual story. It's the first issue after Superior.
I think you can almost guarantee that a 10-year-old boy would... Kids are a hell of a lot more sophisticated than I think adult readers are, because they don't...
They're not really tuned into...
They're not so bothered by
They're
this
not as
shit,
worried about you know? If it counts, which yeah. is the thing that's...
Yeah, absolutely.
...that seems to be a big deal in comic
If
readers.
They don't understand their role with it, as long as the book's fun, and God almighty, Slott's Spider-Man books are fun.
Mm.
What a great time to be a 10-year-old boy reading Spider-Man.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Or girl.
Okay,
sorry.
You've made me happier about suggesting it as well. So,
boy or girl. Just to make that clear, yeah. I want to reiterate that.
Okay. If they had the first... I mentioned Midas Flesh to her, but I said, but don't pick it up now, because it's the 6-issue and an 8-issue run. But it's worth keeping an eye out for a trade, because that's... I'd have totally been up for that at that age. I don't think there's anything particularly grown up in it. So, and James suggested the latest issue of Nova, which yeah. I haven't been reading, but apparently it's a very young superhero at the yeah. moment, and apparently it's quite easy to pick up. But it was still harder than it should have been. There were a lot of new comics this week, and we were kind of having to rack our brains a little bit about what to suggest. Because there should be more than two or three.
Those two are pretty strong, though.
Yeah, that's true. And Kaboom are doing loads of really good stuff.
Oh,
and
Kaboom are superb, especially for slightly younger comic readers.
Damn,
some great stuff.
I should have suggested the Adventure Time stuff. I was talking to them about Minecraft a little bit. Well, Terraria. I can't pretend to know much about Minecraft. But luckily they went with me on that one.
I know my nephews love it.
Yeah. Yeah, they like Terraria because it's there's more stuff you can do in it or something. No, I don't know. All I know is that I said to them that I like it because my brain can't really handle building stuff in 3D, whereas Terraria is just side. Terraria is really good, James.
Good.
Pretty cheap as well.
We've got a lot to get through here. You finished with your story.
Sorry. But anyway, so comics are good.
Mike Giorgio has been in touch.
Has he?
Mike Giorgio is a drawther. He has done such work as Elemental Micah and the Bob or Stephen Bob series. He's done as well. He's a lovely artist. He's a lovely human being, but he's a lovely artist too. And he got in contact with us to tell us that commissions are now open.
He's doing commissions.
And you can contact him for reasonably priced commissions, I believe. Connected to the pod as well. He's done us a Spider-Man for the winner of our competition as well, hasn't he?
Yes. That's pretty cool. Do you want to... I'll put his... if you want to get the address for Mike Giorgio, I will put that in the show notes.
Or you could go to mikedraws.co.uk.
That's Mike, spelt the way Mike spelt, draws, spelt the way draws is spelt, draws@co.uk.
Yeah, but draws as in draws a picture rather than please.
Drawers.
Please feel free to put my stationery in my drawers.
Why would you ever say that to someone? Please feel free to put my stationery in my drawers.
Well, what if you had a stationery delivery? And say, for example, there was like a business support administrator, and they'd taken a delivery of stationery, and they went, oh, there's a stationery delivery. Maybe you'd say to them, please, could you put my stationery that I've ordered in my drawers?
Okay, yeah, I'll allow that. So we got something from Nick Wilkinson as well.
She has sent us an email to tell us about a project that she's involved in at the moment. It's called Torso Bear. And I've got a picture here to show Nick. I printed a picture off in colour. Look, there's Torso Bear.
He's like a bear.
He is. I don't know if we could possibly put that on the page.
He's really cute. I like him. He looks like Columbo, but he's a pink bear.
He does. And it's called Torso Bear Yarns from Toyburg. And it's a story. It's a story, apparently, about the inevitable loss of innocence in a brutal world. And it's he's a toy living in Toyburg. And stuff happens.
Of course, it'd have to be about the inevitable loss of innocence in a, what was it, cruel world. Because I was
brutal world.
Brutal world. Because I was looking at that picture and I was thinking, but Cy Dethan is the guy who wrote Cancer Town. And that's, like, really dark, morbid Clive Barker level body horror nastiness. Yeah. Whereas that picture looks super cute. And you're talking about toys.
It's glorious. I'm so happy. I think I nailed that.
Maybe he's mellowing, I thought. Maybe he's mellowing.
You never know. I nailed the synopsis there, didn't
I? Think you did
I?
Really well, yeah.
It looks lovely, though.
Is that out or coming out? Or
Shall I actually do this properly?
Yeah, try.
So the book's going to be offered via a Kickstarter campaign.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, the Kickstarter.
Okay. And first week pledges will get an... do you know what? I'm going to read this. I'm going to read what we've been saying because I want to do this properly.
Just read it.
Okay. So, because it's a Kickstarter, you need to know this, listener. Nick can edit around this. Torso Bear is a story about the inevitable loss of innocence in a brutal world, as I said. First created by Brett Uren for the digital anthology Outre, expanding on the original short story, Yarns from Toyburg pulls a host of new and established creators into exploring the twisted world of fluffy noir.
Noir.
Torso Bear introduced the character of Ruxby and Hazebrow, children's toys, who are thrown into a chilling noir cycle of murder, deceit and intrigue, where the horror of events stands in stark contrast to the bright and cheerful world in which they take place. The toys of Toyburg blissfully enjoy their waking lives. Most will never encounter anything nasty, but when they sleep, they will experience the strange and sometimes disturbing violation of the playtime. Sometimes they remember. The book will be offered via a Kickstarter campaign, and first week pledges will get a special extra award of a sketch from the creator on the inside front cover of the book, in addition to any other rewards for their pledge level. The basic pledge packages for the book alone will be digital, $10, hard copy,
$25.
Well, I clearly said $25.
I don't know what happened there. For most of that, it sounded like you were reading off an email, but then something happened. And it was chilling.
Thank you. That's called performance, Nick. You wouldn't understand.
That sounds really interesting.
You're not an artiste like I.
That sounds really interesting. They're a great team. Cy is a really interesting writer, so...
Sometimes stuff just needs to be read out, doesn't it?
Mm. Sometimes. Yeah. I wouldn't say as often as we do it, but...
You can get knobbed.
Okay, we'll keep people posted on that as well. But I'll put a link. I'll put any relevant links on the show notes for this episode. So,
I have something to put in my mouth.
Can I just explain what put something in James's mouth is? Don't do the noise,
please,
because it really makes me upset.
Please do. Okay.
It's
just the sound of me eating a slightly larger piece of fruit than I can handle.
We don't really do sponsorship or promotions. I make it sound like it's an ideological standpoint, but really it's just nobody has offered.
You say that, but I'd like to talk about stamps.com.
What we do is if you've got something that you want to promote and you've got the time to put it into words that you want a middle-aged, maybe a tiny bit overweight, but also just quite big framed, so you can't really help some of it reprobate to read out, then you can put something in James's mouth. Don't, that's really horrible. It's a form of abuse. You know we don't like it, and you keep doing it anyway.
So this week's...
So all you have to do is write us down. It's roughly a side of A4, isn't it?
Or less.
Or less. He'll do it in whatever voice you want him to, that's within his repertoire. If you want him to do it, like, sing it or something, he'll do that. Or deliver it in, what is it, the iambic pentameter or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
He'll do that. Just write it down, send it to... mombcast@gmail.com.
Well, Nick, one such listener has done that. David Wynn.
Oh, I like him.
He's given me some instructions, but I should just warn you ahead of time that this will contain spoilers for Monday's Space Escape.
Space Escape. A Space Escape.
Ladies and gentlemen, put something in James's mouth. Oh, my God! Oh, my blooming God, he stabbed him right in the neck. And then he chopped his head off. He chopped his flipping head off. And then he shoved him out the airlock into space. And the rest of the gang don't know yet. They're stuck on a spaceship with a lying, murderous hamster. They've got no idea. Oh, my God, read Spacescape every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. Spacescape.co.uk. Follow the comic on Tumblr, spacescape.tumblr.com. Oh, my God, he stabbed him right in the neck. That's put something in James's mouth.
What's that? I've actually got tears in my eyes.
Spacescape.co.uk. I haven't seen the cape yet.
No, I don't know. Or the cake.
No. So we had a competition, didn't we, Nick?
That was brilliant. What were his notes?
I'd be letting light upon magic. He just said this should be read in the manner of someone who's just seen something incredibly shocking. But I thought I'd dial up.
So the voice was a...
I thought I'd dial up me in a cockney a bit.
Your own addition. That was amazing.
Yeah. I am the man of half a dozen voices.
So the competition. This is a competition we ran on Free Comic Book Day. We've been rubbish about promoting it. We have been rubbish about actually landing it, having a closing date or anything.
Regardless, though, we've been inundated with entries.
Yes. The competition was, how many can you guess? Because on Free Comic Book Day, you can listen to the Free Comic Book Day special we did for 2014, either on the website, on iTunes, on your podcatcher of choice, or on SoundCloud, or on Stitcher. Who we are very proud to be a member of.
Or on Sad Clown.
There's no such thing. But anyway, which we recorded in the Forbidden Planet branch in Southampton. I've always known as Forbidden Planet Southampton.
Before it flooded.
And the competition is to win either a set of all of the Free Comic Book Day comics that they had there, that they had available there.
Yeah.
I don't believe every store got all of the comics available.
We counted about 48, I think, comics.
So
it's going to take you a while to read it. Winner.
Yeah. So either to win that full set and Michael Georgiou sketch.
And
a picture Spider-Man by James.
Yeah. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do four of them over the weekend.
You can do one of those for everyone.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not just for the main
I'm just going to do it on, like, I'm afraid, listener, it's just going to be on A4 digital copy of paper. But, you know, I'll give it my best shot. Whatever you get is going to be my best shot.
And so we had two sets available. The first winner is going to get a full set. And I guess we can do a bundle for, like, we can split the rest in lower and lower increments. to the four runners up, can't we?
Three runners up.
Three runners up, can't we?
Yeah, we can give them a third each.
Literally, if we do a competition, it's really worth entering because not many people.
We were inundated by four entries. So thank you very much, guys, those of you who entered.
The competition was to guess how many copies of Amazing Spider-Man number one were sold at that branch of Forbidden Planet Southampton on that day.
That's right.
Yes.
Don't tell us what the correct answer is just yet.
And you had to choose a number under 100.
Yeah, but above 10.
But above 10, apparently, because that's apparently a thing when people do competitions.
And some of you got that right first time. Let's build up a bit of tension. So we had four entrants.
Who was worst?
Well, let's not do it like that. We had Pete, Leon, George and Martin. Thank you guys for entering. We really appreciated it. Kind of feels like it validates our existence.
Hmm.
So, you know, we know how many downloads we're getting, but we know at least four people listen. So that's nice. Pete guessed that 78 ASMs were sold that day. Leon went low. Leon went low with 27.
Okay.
George Beedham. I'm going to give him his full name because we've spoken about him a lot. He's contributed in the past. George Beedham guessed 72, and the ever delightful Martin Eden guessed 89.
Ooh.
So Pete, 78, Leon, 27, George, 72, Martin, 89.
We use a bit of George Beedham's art for the extra show.
We do. You trying to break my tension?
No. Carry on. I'm still tense.
So, you know, that's what it is. I did wonder. Good for you, though, at your age. The correct answer is...
I don't know.
It's a dramatic pause.
Oh, sorry.
The correct answer is 52.
Woo!
Meaning the closest... Congratulations, George Beedham. You are a Momcast winner!
When you say 52, that's as far as anybody's memory. Are we sure that was...
That was the official answer given to us by the official representative of Forbidden Planet on Twitter today, that had you been a little bit more on the ball, followed our Twitter feeds, followed James, who works at Forbidden Planet, when I said to him, oh, God, I've forgotten what the answer was. Is. Can you tell me? And he just told me, I thought he'd DM me, but he told me in my public timeline, no one entered today to get the right answer. So thank you for being honest. It all goes to show that Momcast listeners are an honest bunch.
Yes.
So congratulations, George. You've got a lot of comics coming your way, and a good Spider-Man and a shit Spider-Man.
Yay.
Pete, Leon and Martin, you've got fewer comics, but you do get a shit Spider-Man too.
Based on how far away you were from the number?
No. We just split it by a third.
Split it three ways.
Because they were all very close. Only one of them was a country mile out, Martin.
The three of you will be getting a three-way split of the remaining comics and a shit Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Woo! We finally got that off our chests.
Yeah. Thank you for entering. Be sure to do so next year, listener.
Yeah.
Tell me again, why don't we do more competitions?
We're not very good at them.
Yeah, that's true.
We also shouldn't really do as many obituary things as we do because we're not very good at them either.
Yeah, I think we usually start them by laughing and that's not good. Why, who's died?
Oh, no one's died.
Well,
I mean, loads of people have probably died. But, like, no one comic-y that I know of.
No. Max Barnard, Max Barnard, he's got a lovely voice. Max Barnard, Max Barnard, comics are his choice.
I need... a desk. Oh, hey, monkeys. But, yes, I need a desk because I have a microphone with quite a weighted base and I'm holding it up to my face, which makes my arm tired, especially if I'm going to talk 5 minutes about stuff that I have an interest in. And I will. I'm going to talk about a comic available on the Kindle because the Kindle's great. The Kindle has loads of stuff on it. It has comics now from DC Comics, who are a bit rubbish, but you can get like their old comics, like the John Ostrander Martian Manhunter run on there now. That's amazing. Image Comics, where you can buy individual issues, which makes it really awkward to search for what you want to find when you're just searching Image Comics. They have Dark Horse, so you can get Hellboy and Star Wars for the moment. Maybe they publish something else as well. You can get stuff from IDW, so, you know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comics and fuck everything else. It's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right? And you can get manga. You can get manga. That's great. Because I like manga, as you all well know. They have manga on there from Viz Media. They have manga on there from Kodansha. They have manga on there from your mum. Yeah. No, there's loads of manga on there. And I'm going to talk about Viz Media one, because, I mean, I've been reading their published comics for the last 10 years. Why stop now? But not a Shueisha one from them. Not one from one of the many Jump magazines in Japan, which I tend to go towards, but rather one from Shonen Sunday, which is the slightly smaller magazine published by Shogakukan, the primary shareholder in Viz Media. And I love Shonen Sunday. If I could compare it to anything, I'll say it's like a much lighter version of 2000 AD. It's not a big hitter in any way anymore, but, it publishes some amazing comics. Keep in mind, when I say not a great hitter, the comic I'm talking about now has sold like 15 million copies over 21 published volumes, so big hitter, just not in comparison to Jump. And it's Magi, the Labyrinth of Magic, from Shinobu Otaka, who had previously done Sumomomo, a series about a really strong girl marrying a really boring guy, and that was fun. But this is even more fun, because it's 1001 Arabian Nights, if you didn't actually read 1001 Arabian Nights, in that it's about Aladdin, a 10-year-old boy who's got a little chest wrap because he was originally designed as a girl before the author changed his mind, so it just looks like he's trying to cover his little boy titties, which wasn't... Boy titties wasn't the word I wanted to say today. But yeah, he travels around with a magic carpet for a turban, and he's got like a recorder, like a little kid's flute thing that he plays to summon his own genie called Ugo. And he goes off on adventures. Like, he's discovering that he's one of these very important people who gets to decide who will be king in this kingdom. And he makes friends with Ali Baba, also from 1001 Tales of Arabian Nights. And they have a nice little thing that Tumblr wants to make them kiss. And he basically says, oh, Ali Baba, he accidentally chooses him to be his king candidate, which is fine. And Alibaba gets his own genie, his own djinn, called Aman, who's like a fire guy. And they team up with a really strong girl with red hair, and she can kick things really hard, called Morgiana. And they go on adventures where they, like, hang out with Sinbad, who's also quite cool, gets his own spin-off comic as well. And they fight bad people like the Kingdom of Ko. It's very much a Shonen Sunday fantasy action series. It's a fantasy action series in the most Shonen tradition. It's aimed at teenage boys. It's, oh, look, everyone's jolly and happy. Friendship's the way forward. Also, magic. And that's great. It's absolutely bloody brilliant. It's a beautiful comic. There's very little like it out there. And just, it's one of those series that manages to go and do something very rare in comics today, in that the end of each volume, which is hard to plan out when you're doing it with 20-page weekly things that are collected, has that perfect pull to get you in for the next one by just, like, leaving you with either a mystery or a cliffhanger just to keep you going. I'm 5 volumes in now, and I'm gagging for the 6th, which is out in print, but not on the Kindle, because Viz are weird. But, oh, it's absolutely excellent. You'll notice I'm having a hard time explaining it, like, within great details, but just, it's funny, it's charming, it's super interesting. And, like, the way all the genies are used, like Ugo, Aladdin's one, he comes out of flute, but his head can't make it through, so you've always just got, like, this giant burly blue guy, but with a flute for a head, which is really funny. And, like, oh, it's good. Get it. I've spent 5 minutes not really describing it. See you next week.
Do you want to do your spotlight?
Give me 5, Nick.
I will. Do you want to preamble into it while I'm giving you 5?
So, yeah, I'm doing a spotlight. The reason I'm doing spotlights is because I no longer buy weekly comics. I'm not going to go into why. It's a secret. It's, you know, personal. You know, if you want to know...
depressing is what it is.
If you want to know, take the time to get to know me and I'll share with you.
Or listen back to one of the episodes where he explained it.
I think you'll find it'll bring you down. I've been going to the library and I've been slowly working my way through their comic book collection. And I saw this book and I thought, oh, well, I've not heard of this. I'll have a little go with the Savage Sword of Cole. Savage Sword to Coal, this is a collection of stories that were originally printed by Marvel in the 1970s, sometimes in his own book, sometimes in a book that was primarily one of his Bedfellows titles. For Cull is the from the Imaginarium of Robert E. Howard. In fact, if you go to the Wikipedia page of Cull of Atlantis, you'll find out the following information: that he's created by Robert E. Howard, and his gender is male, and his occupation is barbarian. So that's a lot of his personal details. So if you wanted to steal the identity of Cull, you've got a lot of the information you need there to do so. Not sure of his mother's maiden name.
Should I reserve any questions to the end?
Would you, Nick?
Okay,
please. Because I've a little to go through here.
Okay.
And I'm running out of time quite rapidly. These comics were originally, as I said, published between 71 and 85. And they were often published in The Savage Sword of Conan. Dark Horse have recently picked up the character and have issued on and off what they call books.
Collection books.
And in fact, this impressive 400 plus page tome is indeed a Dark Horse publication. You can buy it still from Dark Horse. It's priced at $19.99, but depending on its availability on Amazon, it'll either be more or less than that. Yeah, and they might have some new and used as well. Or if you go there after this Saturday, you can pick it up to read from Southampton Central Library. So, The Savage Sword of Cull. It's a big old book. It's got 400-something pages.
How many stories?
Oh, God almighty. Let's have a look how many stories it's got. 8, 10, more than 10. you're coming on to it. Oh, I don't know what, 30. And you've got work here by people like John Severin, Jeff Isherwood, and Sal Buscema. Thank you,
Mary Severin.
That's it.
Cool.
And also what's his name? You know,
John Bolton.
Yeah,
Walt Simonson.
You've got stuff written by Doug Mensch here, Sonny Trinidad, and
Roy Thomas. No, Roy Foster.
Yeah,
Roy Thomas.
Roy Thomas. And I don't know why I can't.
I think Barry Wynn Smith's in there. It's actually an amazing.
Yeah, a really impressive roll call. It looks beautiful. And of course, it is in that, you know, very beautiful sort of silver modern age style. That, you know, I think we are all men of a certain... Oh, God, I've done it again, haven't
men
I?
Men of a certain
it's
age.
It's all about men, isn't it, today?
Yeah.
What is wrong with me? All people who read comics of a certain age be very familiar with.
I think Cull and most of the Robert E. Howard stuff is pretty masculine, though.
It is very much so. And this is a lovely, really nice collection, actually, that has both comic reprints and some prose pieces about Cull. I think for people who are familiar with the character, which I was not, he is, of course, an Atlantean barbarian that rises to become king of the land near Atlantis, which is nice. But I've got a terrible admission to make, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't read all the stories in here.
How many did you read?
A few. My favourite... However, there was one that was a particular flavour, and I tell you, I think it gives a flavour of Cull. It was called The Shadow Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
It was written by Roy Thomas, and it had art by Marie and John Severin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the story of, after his ascension to power, obviously, there's a conspiracy, to try and dethrone him by shape-shifting snake people.
Ooh.
And the only way that you can tell that someone's a shape-shifting snake person is by making them utter a phrase that only humans can utter. But along with a savage, Cull goes through his castle, finding out the conspirators and giving them a right good licking with his savage sword. But it's that sort of thing. It is really, really dense. There is a lot of reading there. I kind of wish I'd started earlier. But it's good, old-fashioned fun, and well worth your $20 that you spend on it, if it's your sort of thing. I'll be honest with you, sword and sorcery comics are not necessarily my cup thing. Tea. But I can appreciate the art that went into it. But yeah, it's, and you know, as was the want of the age, the storytelling is somewhat overblown and verbose.
I was going to say, if you're not expecting it, if you're not fully prepared for it, 70s and 80s comic writing can be very wordy and dense. There are a lot of words in them.
Especially when they're brave and bold warriors.
My main question...
Yeah, okay, I'm now prepared to take questions from the floor.
Bearing in mind it's Robert E. Howard...
Yes.
What is the difference, really, between Carl and Conan?
Carl is a king.
But Conan ends up being a king as well.
Carl is different. Now, I believe Wikipedia, there was a little bit of a thing on about that that says about, and I read about it earlier, he's more introspective, I'm led to believe, than Conan. Right. And Conan's first appearance, Nick, must be remembered, was a rewrite of a rejected Cull story.
I was going to say...
So I believe Cull came first, as good guys don't.
So he and Conan are very similar, but Cull is more introspective.
That's right.
So basically...
He's more of a thinker.
Cull is basically Conan written by Brian Wood?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Although Conan written by Brian Wood is fine.
Yeah. I don't know.
But he's more of a thinker, especially with Bellett, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean...
He thinks, when am I going to get the cuddle with Bellett next? Oh, I like Bellett, he thinks.
He thinks about Bellett quite a lot.
Bellett's lovely with her pasty skin. She's very pale, though, Bellett, isn't she?
Yeah, I wouldn't... There's no need to be normative.
Sorry. I mean, beautiful. I mean, she's got beautiful alabaster skin. I'm not knocking it.
The... Art,
oh, God, I'm being pervy, aren't I? I don't mean to be.
The art in that book is amazing.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It's a lot of great artists at a time when they were really doing the stuff that they're remembered for,
yeah.
I think. Yeah. It was quite interesting seeing Walt Simonson's art in there, because I tend to think of him as a much more superhero-y and science fiction-y artist. But yeah, I don't know.
It is lovely. I'm sorry. Do you know, that's the first time in almost 5 years, Nick, that I've presented a spotlight... Where I haven't read the whole book, I feel quite guilty and ashamed.
That's okay. It was a big book.
It's huge, man.
The flavour of it, it's fine.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
I spent quite a pleasant 20 minutes leafing through that while you were doing food stuff the other day. And Spider-Man Noir, which James talked about on, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's a really good book. When James spotlights a book, quite often it's worth... paying attention and picking that book up. That's what I'm saying.
Thank you.
Listener.
Thank you.
It remains for us, I guess, to see what we're doing in the next few days and fuck off.
Yes.
Got anything going on at the weekend?
Isn't that how episode 20 ended? I can't... it's a little bit of in mom humour there.
Yeah.
I can't remember what I'm doing this weekend. I know after talking to my doctor, I definitely need more structure around my weekends. So what I'll do is I'll have more structure around my weekend.
Right, a plan.
We probably will. We were going to go and do something. We're not now. We were looking at, do you know, if you listen to both podcasts, this will be a little bit of an update from the last one. We were going to go and look at a cat. Not the three-legged one, but a cat with a bit of tail off.
James and his partner were going to get a three-legged cat.
He was but the three-legged cat was rehomed. Brilliant.
Okay.
We don't want to get a brand new cat. We want to rehome a cat.
They want a broken cat. Sorry, that's
ideally,
I want
one with some sort of disability. This one had a bit of tail off and was 7 years old, so it was old and had a bit of tail off. But they checked it today. To see if it liked dogs, because we've got two dogs. Doesn't like dogs.
Okay, so can't have that then.
No, it would not be happy in our home, which is sad. But there will be, unfortunately, or fortunately for us, the world is full of feckless cat owners. So eventually one will come up that will fit in with our living arrangements.
Your little family.
Yeah. I suggested to someone today that basically what I'm doing is where we have a relatively limited income these days, we're just filling the house up with sort of food objects that we can...
If you ever need to...
We'll start with the guinea pigs,
yeah.
Then the cat, then Lois, and then Coda.
You could eat maybe one of the dogs and you might not have to eat all of the other animals.
All right. Lois is toast, bless her.
Oh.
Toast. If I have to choose one, it's going to be Lois.
Because you love her the most.
No.
Oh, okay. I don't know what we'll be doing this weekend. I don't think we've got many plans. Friends are over on Friday night.
Selecting which one of your dogs you'll eat if you need it was easy.
I already know it's going to be Anya.
Yeah, because she's bigger. She's got more flesh.
I love her more, but she is bigger and older. So, So I don't need to spend too much time on that. In fact, I've kind of decided already, haven't I? Yeah. So
listener, if you've got pets, do you want to tell us which one you'd eat first?
Yeah, definitely. Or family members. We haven't even started on that yet. I don't know what we're doing. To be honest, I'm taking every day as it comes at the moment. Very tired. Have I told you how busy I am?
Yeah, you never stop telling me
I'm
how busy.
I'm so tired and busy. It's
Nick,
unbelievable.
How do you know someone's busy?
Don't worry. They're tired.
Long and the short of it.
Thank you, contributor. You're awesome, and we really do appreciate the effort, and the insight, and the time, and the energy, and the effort. Thank you, listener. We really do appreciate the input and the time and the energy and the effort that you put into listening to us. James?
I'd like to say thank you for the music and giving it to me.
Yes. Thank you for being a friend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I do love podcasting with you, James. You're like the best, the best of me and the worst of me.
I don't get it.
Hey?
I don't get it.
What?
I don't know.
I do. I love podcasting with you. That was me being sincere.
Oh, shit. I thought you were telling me I love podcasting with you. That's why I do like to do. I like to do 2 a week with you if I can. Twice a week with Nick.
I have realised that... I feel like sometimes I am insincere and sometimes I am sarcastic and sometimes I am mean.
Mm.
But I feel like it's always, to me, it's always clear which of those things I'm trying to be. And I don't know if it is to other people.
Not always.
Hmm. I don't really know what I can do.
No,
there aren't enough emoticons for the breadth of human experience.
And life doesn't come with them, does it?
No. So.
I've always found that a quick... You taking the piss? That always clears things up.
Are you taking the piss?
No.
And then if I say yes, I obviously... Because what I end up doing is when someone says, oh, are you saying no, I normally say yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's clear that I'm being sarcastic when I say that, isn't it?
In that tone.
Yeah.
Not typed out, though.
I think context is important.
Yeah, but not everyone understands that. Some people are stupid.
Bye-bye.
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 Bye-bye. Fucking hell. Neither.